Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Luciano. Mike, football is back. How are you feeling today, buddy? What's up?
Well, I always like doing these little game preview things, which means that we actually get to talk about some ball, and we can confirm that after the Monday night game against the San Francisco 49ers on the road, because why not give them the hardest possible game? And the easiest way to start out 0-1 and get made fun of by everybody, you know, why not do that? We will be live after the show. So for you West Coasters, we will be there. But yep. We also got some Jets news. One guy who definitely is in the building and one guy who is definitely not in the building that we will get into. But before all of that, you can find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, Spotify. We're on all the major podcast sites, and we're on YouTube at the Jet Press. You can like the stream there. You can subscribe there. We got tons of good stuff coming for you this season. I'm really pumped. And I'm also really pumped because the Jets are taking care of their own guys. For as much as we criticize Joe Douglas, the last couple months, he has been very true to his word because he has said, if you show up, we are going to pay you. Hassan Reddick, get the hint. Michael Carter, the second, who wasn't even the first player named Michael Carter from an ACC school the Jets drafted in the same draft class, he showed up, and he is officially extended 3 years, a little under $31 million, so a little under $11 million a year. He is now the highest-paid slot cornerback in the NFL, right on par with kind of the other elite guys. A lot of guys you'll hear about being high-end cornerback, slot cornerbacks are Buffalo's Taron Johnson and Indianapolis's Kenny Moore. They're both right around $10 million a year. So this is perfectly in line with those other contracts. So nothing really too alarming here. I have two main thoughts on this deal. Number one, it kind of shows how uneducated a lot of the casual fan base is, but not the Jets fan base. I'd say rather general NFL fans, because they'll just look at the numbers. And they'll look at, he's the third quarterback, cornerback getting $11 million a year. Well, how could they do this? This is dumb. And that just tells you that they don't understand the impact of slot cornerback play in the modern NFL, and they don't understand how good Michael Carter is at that. Despite being a smaller guy, he's probably, what, 5'9"?
Yeah, I think he's listed.
Barely 200 pounds. And a fifth-round pick who in college, actually at Duke, was a converted safety. So little tiny guy, and boy, is he – I mean, he takes on tight ends. He takes on big receivers, clamps him up, willing to hit in the run game. I mean, he's not going to be Ronnie Lott, but a willing run defender who can make some plays there. And number two, I don't think this is a good sign for DJ Reed supporters, because Sauce is going to get a huge contract, Sauce Gardner, especially now, by the way, looking at what Pat Surtain got from the Broncos. I'd imagine he exceeds that and he'll become the first $25 million a year cornerback, and only the second $100 million cornerback, because Jalen Ramsey did 5 years, $100 million. So he would join a very elite club once he gets – it's his time to get paid, next year. Mm-hmm. DJ Reed, on the other hand, impending free agent, this is kind of what he came to the Jets for, was like a $10 million a year guy. No one knew he'd be this good, even though he was good. I could see the Jets saying, all right, we got our guy. So he's not leaving. He's a Jet for – ideally a Jet for life, Sauce Gardner. Michael Carter, as good as he gets at his position, locked in. We'll figure out cornerback two on the outside when it comes to it. It reminds me kind of how the Cowboys in the 90s operated with Deion Sanders, where Deion was really the only guy they paid in that second – before Darren Woodson, and they drafted him later. Deion was the only guy they really – paid a lot in that secondary. The thought being, well, the impact of having him on the number one receiver and anybody at the two, Kevin Smith, Larry Brown, anybody else at the number two spot, that's better than just splitting it between two equal guys. And I feel like the Jets are thinking like that too. Like, all right, we got our main guy and we got our slot guy. We'll figure it out on the other end. If we're willing to subtract there to keep these guys happy, I think the Jets have kind of come to that decision.
Yeah, I agree. And we've talked about the DJ Reed situation, honestly, a lot over the last couple of months, few months. This was a situation and a decision that the Jets had to make that we've seen coming for a while. But before we even talked about that, I just want to give props to Michael Carter, man, like, and props to the entire Jets defensive staff. We've talked so much about the work that Robert Saleh, the work that Jeff Ulbrich, Tony Oden, who goes vastly underappreciated in that Jets defensive staff, the work that they've done to develop so many players in this roster. And I think Michael Carter II is one of the most amazing success stories that they've had in terms of development on this roster. This is a dude who he was a fifth round pick in 2021, and he was kind of seen going into that draft, if I remember correctly, as more of like a late day three UDFA guy. I think The Athletic listed him as a priority free agent. He was expected not even to get drafted. The Jets,
a lot of people consider that an overdraft.
Right, exactly. The Jets take a chance on him in the fifth round. This is a dude who was a three-year starter at Duke, but he kind of moved around a lot. You mentioned he was a converted safety. He did play some corner in college, but he was really just kind of playing everywhere. Obviously, at 5'9 in the NFL, you're probably not going to hold up at outside corner unless you're DJ Reed, who is an anomaly. But they moved him to nickel corner. He competes for a starting job as a rookie. Remember, going into that 2021 season, that was still a really bad Jets defense, a really bad Jets secondary, where they had I'm pretty sure Bless Austin started that year, if I'm remembering correctly.
You're right. Wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the guys that they had in that secondary. Michael Carter comes in as a fifth-round converted safety, wins the starting nickel job coming out of camp, and 3 years later is not only the best player at his position, arguably in the NFL, but he's now the highest paid player at his position. And I believe in terms of total guarantees, he's the highest paid nickel corner of all time. In terms of total value, I think he just came short of Taron Johnson by like $250,000. But he is currently the highest paid in terms of average annual value at his position in the NFL. And it's impossible to say he doesn't deserve it. I tweeted this out right after it happened. I think the best nickel cornerback in the NFL is now the highest paid nickel corner. Michael Carter, first in yards allowed. This is ranks amongst all slot cornerbacks in the NFL last season. First in yards allowed, first in receptions allowed, first in yards per snap, and first in PFF coverage grade. He was the best nickel corner in the NFL last year, and now he's getting paid like it. So that's a credit to Michael Carter for developing the way that he has, and it's a credit to the Jets defensive staff for developing him in the way that they have. So I just wanted to give that shout out first. And as far as long-term ramifications.
Before that too, I got a correction. Bless Austin did not start, but Javelin Guidry started three games. Elijah Riley started seven games.
He was a safety, Elijah Riley.
He was a safety. Yeah, I'm just showing you the state of the secondary he came into. Sherrod Neesman started a game.
Sherrod Neesman. Wasn't Adrian Colbert, or was that? Was that Adrian?
He was there. Sheldrick Redwine. This is the depths that he had to crawl out of.
Well, that was the year they started like six different safeties. Matthias Farley, I think, might have been there.
That was the 51 points against the Patriots game.
Yeah,
that was tough.
That secondary was – it's insane to think about how bad that secondary was considering where we are now. But it was so bad. It was – that's right. Bless Austin started in 2020, and then he entered 2020, like the summer of 2021, as like the projected starter, and then he didn't even make the team. That's how bad it was. I think Echols probably started, Echols definitely started. Echols and Bryce Hall were, I think, the two starters, maybe? I don't know, at corner. But yeah, it's crazy to see how far that Jets secondary has come.
Men, When we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys. How's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And as far as what this means for the future for DJ Reed, look, we've talked about it a lot on the show. DJ Reed is a phenomenal player. He's a great dude. And I could not be happier for the success that he's found with the Jets. He is part of the best secondary in the NFL, part of the best cornerback room the NFL has seen in a long time. Unfortunately, you can't pay everyone. And I know people continue to utter that phrase. There is no more obvious candidate for a don't pay this guy in terms of the roster construction of this Jets team than DJ Reed. They have the best cornerback in the NFL in Sauce Gardner. They have a homegrown nickel corner in Michael Carter, who, despite being the highest paid player at his position, is still on a relative bargain of a contract. That nickel corner market, dude, is still so deflated, and it is crazy to me that nickel corners are not valued higher in the NFL. Honestly, just cornerbacks in general, the cornerback market is very depressed compared to the wide receiver market, but that works in the Jets' favor in this situation because they're able to get Michael Carter for less than $11 million a year. And then the other part of it is you also have potential internal replacements. Quantez Siggers, they drafted to maybe be that guy. They have Jarque Renaud-Converse. Both of those dudes had really, really strong summers. And if the Jets feel confident with one of them starting opposite Sauce Gardner next year, I think that makes a lot of sense as a cheap, low-cost internal replacement. And then the last part of it, DJ Reed's what? Is he 28 right now? 29? He's going to be turning 30 years old soon.
He is 27. He'll turn 28 during the season. Okay.
He turns 28 in November. It's a guy who's he's pushing 30. He's still not like he still, I think, has a few more good years left in him. But I don't know how much his body type is going to hold up, especially at outside corner. I think he's someone who he might not age as well as other cornerbacks. And it's, I hate to say that. And I just I think that is a conversation the Jets are having. There is no more obvious player that you have other guys to pay. There's no more obvious candidate for a let this guy walk than DJ Reed. And that's a shame. And I hope he balls out this year. And I hope he gets a big payday from another team. It's just not going to be the Jets. And this is something that we've seen coming for a while. We had a feeling they would prioritize Michael Carter. It is going to be a lot cheaper to keep Michael Carter, as we've already seen, because the nickel corner market just is not what the outside cornerback market is. It just makes sense. And that sucks for DJ Reed, but you know, it's what it is. It's what it is. And I'm really happy for Michael Carter getting his payday because he definitely deserves it.
DJ Reed, and I don't want to use this term like in a negative way because I really don't want to mean it in a negative way, but he's, I think, replaceable in the same way that I thought John Franklin Myers was, in that like they're obviously both good players and they've had their best years with the Jets, but it's one of the you look around long enough, you can get a DJ Reed, you can get a John Franklin Myers. Like they're out there, they're not singular talents. And this is the first of what's going to be many extensions, because that 2022 class, can you get a better first four picks in a row than that? And they all need new contracts. I'd imagine they're all going to get paid. The only one I could possibly see maybe they do something a little weird with would be Jermaine Johnson, just because I feel like they pay Breece Hall. I would have said before, I don't know, just because running backs nowadays, but I feel like Breece gets paid, especially if Rodgers is, we don't know how long Rodgers is going to be here. This gives him like another weapon to play with. Garrett Wilson's a no doubter. You could, my 9-year-old brother would say pay Garrett Wilson, and he'd be absolutely right in that. Jermaine's the only one where I think they could be like, well, you have Reddick if he reports McDonald. Like, there's something there where if he got to leave one out, it's him. But I think all four are going to get paid. So you can't pay Reed, or maybe they pay AVT too. You certainly can't pay Reed either. So I feel bad. But again, like,
it's a business.
You mentioned Stiggers. You mentioned Bernard Converse. I don't know if I'm ready to give them a starting job, like a fifth round pick, barely in the fifth round, a sixth round pick from Tuesday. Like, that's a big jump. I know Tony Adams has done it from undrafted, but I don't think you see that a lot. So maybe if we're already going to do like a proto 2025 offseason plan, maybe you take a gamble on like a veteran, on like a cheap 1-year deal. That way you have a guy who you think could be a cornerback too on the outside. And just in case that they start falling off, you have internal replacement. I wouldn't just hand those guys the job immediately, but that's for 2025. For immediately, I'm happy for Michael Carter. This was easy, especially at the price point. Like,
yes.
If the nickel corner market caught up, like nickel corners, I don't think are ever going to make more than outside corners. And I don't think that necessarily they should, not to sound too oppressive here, but like to get him at $11 million a year, when I would say he's better at being a slot corner than DJ Reed is at being an outside corner.
Yes.
And DJ Reed from 3 years ago basically has the same annual value as Michael Carter now. Like, if this market explodes, this could end up being one of the best deal, maybe the best deal contract wise Douglas has done in terms of just value from an asset.
Yeah, it's great value. And it's also a good deal for Michael Carter because he'll hit the market again in 3 years when he's 28 years old. As we're seeing with DJ Reed, that's still enough time to cash in another deal. So it also shows that the Jets are kind of, I want to say, learning from past mistakes that they may have made with a certain pass rusher who was also homegrown, who they could have extended at a very reasonable price, and they didn't. And then they let him play out the rest of his contract, and that price went way up. Of course, talking about Bryce Huff here, I think getting ahead of the market now is a very, very smart move by the Jets. It sends a message, like you said, to the rest of the locker room that's, you know, hey, if you are a homegrown talent and you are playing well, we will reward you. And that's not a message that the Jets have really sent to their roster in a long time. I mean, Michael Carter is the first Joe Douglas draft pick to receive a multi-year extension. I don't know if you realize that, Mike. Like, he's had Ashton Davis, I believe, was brought back on a one-year deal. That might be it.
Is 2019 wasn't him. That was McCagnon. 2019
was McCagnon. So that was Nathan Shepard.
That was Nathan Shepard. 2020 was a wash. That was Mekhi Becton.
2020 Davis is the only one who's been extended from that class, or, you know, extended, brought back another
deal. What a mess.
So yeah, I believe Michael Carter is the only Michael Carter and Ashton Davis are the only two Jets or Joe Douglas draft picks who have been brought back on a second contract. We'll go to a comment in chat really quick. I think Allen maybe with an O said DJ Reed is gone. Too bad. The earliest pick we can get from him is a 2026 cop past our A-Rod window. Yeah, but also the other part to consider is that 2026 cop pick could just be your Hassan Reddick replacement comp pick. If Reed makes enough money, that could be a third round pick. And that is exactly what you already gave up for Hassan Reddick, which I think, Mike, that kind of transition.
Translates is what you're looking for.
Transition is the word I was thinking of. Transitions into what we're going to talk about now. And I think it also is a good point to mention that Michael Carter extension, not only does it send a message to the Jets locker room, it sends a message to one Hassan Reddick, which is, show up and you might just get paid too. And I think that is a message that obviously that wasn't necessarily the top priority of the Michael Carter extension, but I think that was definitely part of it.
It's you know what, as has been proven in writing, if you show up, Joe Douglas will pay you. True. Hassan Reddick. There's really nothing new to report in that. In terms of like his availability for playing on the Jets, he's probably not going to play week one. I don't think he's coming back probably for this week. I think maybe soon. But again, I thought that a while ago, and yep, here we are still doing this. He's now the only player that is still holding out and not showing up. Some guys are holding out and showing up, and some guys got their situations resolved, like the 49ers, Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams, both back-to-back. And here the Jets are with Hassan Reddick. His agent's, by the way, very busy. His agent's Pat Surtain's agent. So yep, he's working the phones, but for some reason, Hassan Reddick ain't moving much. Now, he did show up at a charity event, and he did sign some Jets helmets, but I mean, I don't think he's like a bad person. I think he went to that because he had to when he signed Jets helmets because people gave it to him. I don't think that has anything to do with maybe he's warming up to the Jets. They did end up clearing some cap space with this Carter extension to possibly welcome a Reddick deal that kind of beefs up his money this year and then also maybe give him some incentives to possibly earn back the money he's losing in fines because he's now been fined over $2 million and apparently can still financially stomach that, which, God, I would love to be in that position. The problem, though, the reason I'm not too, like, excited about this is – the Jets, even before doing all these, like, they had room to bring Hassan Reddick in. They didn't need to do all this maneuvering.
Well, so they
after Franklin Myers, they could have just said, hey, come in, show up, and we'll work out an extension, which sure is what they said they were going to do for months now.
Well, not an
extension. He said, I don't want to do it. So in reality, like, I don't really think much has changed here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask New People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
The Jets restructured the contracts of Quincy Williams and Tyler Conklin yesterday. And the timing of that I thought was very interesting. They now have roughly, I mean, I don't know how much cap space the Carter extension created yet. I don't think those details are officially out. But excluding the Carter extension, which will probably, it won't create much because his cap hit was already very small this year, but probably create an extra, you know, million maybe. But it's, I think they have around $19 million in cap space, which now is officially enough because they created $8 million in cap space by restructuring Conklin and Quincy Williams. So they do have enough. And I think the timing of that was notable. I don't necessarily think that means a deal is imminent, that they're about to like immediately reach a deal with Hassan Reddick, although knowing our track record with the show, it'll come out right after we finish recording. But I do think that that's interesting. And I think that they clearly made that room to bring in Hassan Reddick whenever that happens, because they did need to create some cap space. His cap hit, it's probably going to change, but it was supposed to be $15 million this year. Again, whenever he does show up, they're going to rework that deal. Again, they're not going to extend him. It's just not happening, but they will rework his contract, and it won't be, I don't think his cap, it will be exactly $15 million. So I don't know what it's going to end up being, but they did need to create some space, and they did. That's what we got. I don't think the charity event means anything. It was he was obligated to show up there. He did. He signed Jets helmets because people brought Jets helmets. He didn't bring Jets helmets, and he wasn't giving out Jets memorabilia to people. But I do think the timing of that is interesting. It's just, Mike, it's so bizarre. It is such a bizarre situation because, you know, we talked about this so much over the last few months. And I remember talking about this in like May and being like, or even in April and being like, yeah, he'll show up. Yeah, it's not going to be a big deal. There's no incentive for either side to keep dragging this out. And there's still no incentive for either side to keep dragging this out.
No one wins.
And yet we're still here. We are 5-6 days away from the Jets' first game of the season. And five days. And there is still no Hassan Reddick. He has still not showed up. At this point, like, again, you know, we could fault the Jets for a few things in here. We've talked about this at a length. I do not like the moves they made with the defensive line this offseason. I think that they indirectly have caused this situation. Then you could also blame them for communication issues. But right now, I don't know if the Jets are necessarily doing the wrong thing. They definitely shouldn't extend him. That's for sure. So they're doing the right thing by not just giving in and extending him. From Hassan Reddick's perspective, I'm so curious as to what his end game is. Like, where does he think this is going? And I will gladly side with the player in a lot of holdout situations. I was one of the few people defending Jamal Adams a few years ago when his whole contract drama was happening with the Jets. Because then the difference between that and the difference between like a Brandon Ayuk situation is that there were teams willing to give Jamal Adams a contract the Jets didn't want to give him. There were teams willing to give Brandon Ayuk a contract that the Niners initially did not want to give him. They were correctly valuing their markets. By all accounts, by every report we have seen, there is not a single team that is willing to trade for Hassan Reddick and give him the contract he's seeking. So what the hell is the point of the holdout? He's holding out for a contract that no team is going to give him. And at that point, there's no end game. Like, there's no end game. The trade request is hollow because no team wants to trade for you and give you the contract. And you're holding out for a contract that the Jets have openly said they're not giving you and that no other team is giving you. So it doesn't make sense to me, Mike. I'm at a loss. I honestly don't know what's going on because I don't think anybody really knows except Hassan Reddick and people that are very close to him. People are saying that he's getting bad advice. I'd be surprised if Tory Dandy, his agent, is telling him to do this, because I'd like to think Tory Dandy is a much smarter person as far as NFL business than I am.
He just got Sertan $96 million of business.
Right. He just got Pat Sertan paid. He just got CeeDee Lamb paid. Dude knows what he's doing. I'd be very surprised if he is telling Hassan Reddick to hold out for a contract that no team is going to give him. He's only tanking his value. So that only leads me to believe that this is Hassan Reddick making this decision, and it's almost out of principle at this point that he's holding out.
And then the agent has to defend him just because he's obligated to stick up for his client. So
right. So that's my interpretation. This is just Hassan Reddick overvaluing his market and holding out of principle. He's going to have to show up eventually. We know this. I see some people have compared it to the Chris Jones situation from last year. Maybe he shows up after week one. It's possible. They're very different situations because obviously Chris Jones had a rapport with his teammates. He had a rapport with
Chris Jones is better than Hassan Reddick.
Right. Chris Jones is the best defensive tackle in the NFL right now. So they're not comparable. And again, Hassan Reddick has not even met most of his Jets teammates. He hasn't spoken to Robert Saleh since before training camp began in July. Like he's not going to just show up and immediately like be inserted into the starting lineup playing 65% of snaps. That's just not going to happen. I'm sure he's learned the playbook to some extent. And also he's playing edge rusher. He's not playing quarterback. It's a bit different, but
That guy, go get him. Okay.
Right. It's just so bizarre because he's not helping his situation in any way at all. The Jets are obviously not aided by this situation dragging out any further. It almost feels a little childish to me too, because it's like the Jets are over here saying, we're not going to negotiate with you until you report. And Reddick's like, well, I'm not going to, you know, report unless I negotiate and have a new contract. That feels so childish to me.
It's just, it's a pissing contest. That's what it is.
It is. And it's just
nobody wants to lose. Nobody wants to look weak.
Yeah. We shouldn't be in this situation. It's very, very, very dumb that we're in this situation. I definitely think both sides are to blame. But right now, I'm just so curious as to what Hassan Reddick thinks the end game is, because I'm at a loss.
I've seen people defend Reddick, or at least go against Douglas, with the logic of, well, if you get Hassan Reddick signed and then he helps you win a championship, nobody's going to remember any of that. Like, Emmitt Smith did that once with the Cowboys. He held out like three games after they won the Super Bowl, and then he got extended and they won a Super Bowl after that. But after Charles Haley threw a helmet at Jerry Jones and almost killed him. But that happened, by the way. But the difference, though, is with how much money he's incurring. And again, that was at the time. Emmitt Smith was the best running back in the league. Anybody would have paid him. Hassan Reddick, look, as we've said before, everybody is right, everybody is wrong. Here's why Hassan Reddick is right. He is extremely underpaid. He is really good. The Jets knew he wanted a new contract when they traded for him. The Jets are much weaker where Hassan Reddick plays. Therefore, getting him is very important and will help you. And they need a player like that, because Jermaine Johnson's really good and Bryce Huff's really good. Neither of them are that good. There's where Hassan Reddick's right. And the Jets are right with, you haven't done anything yet. Show up. You also are contracted to play legally to play for us. You have to at least show up to play. We're not just going to let you basically come in and say, here's how things are doing. And we're not going to let you get away with this, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Of ruining the depth chart, kind of messing up the vibe, because everything was going perfect for the Jets this offseason. Good draft, great free agency. Until this is really the one big negative. And then you're going to get what you want anyway. And then we're going to overpay for you on top of that. And then we're going to give you more money. I mean, he's from Camden. He was in Philly. They're good. That's his hometown team. And he didn't want to stay there. So clearly the main motive is not necessarily being in a scheme that I like or being on a good team. It's the payday. So the Jets are saying, we have some nervousness about that, because as we just talked about and gave you chapter and verse about, we got to pay like seven guys. And you knew that, because I'm sure they told you, hey, the Jets, you want to go to the Jets? He probably could have said no, and they probably would have redid it. But he said, yeah, of course I'll go to the Jets, knowing all the stuff that they had. So everybody, the way that, you know, people can alter different things and just change how a story is perceived. There are reasonable ways to make it look like the Jets are 100% correct and Hassan Reddick is 0% correct, and the other way around.
Yeah.
That's what so at a certain point, though, like, instead of just arguing, remember leverage, instead of that and the PR battle, at a certain point, you want to just like talk like two kids who are arguing over who gets to play the video game next. You want to be like, all right, stop. Nobody wins.
Yeah.
Make up with each other. Because this isn't good for anybody. Because you know what's going to happen to Hassan Reddick? If you keep doing this, you're going to come back. You're going to be out of shape. You're going to be cold because you didn't have the reps coming in. So even if you accrue a league year, it's not going to be your best year. You're not going to keep that 10-sack streak. That's probably going to get you paid a lot of money on the open market. And if you keep holding out, well, your contract's not going to accrue for another league year. And you're going to be right back with the Jets, and then around and around we go. No one is helped by this.
Yeah.
On either side, and yet and again, I get from a personal level, the Jets don't want to let Hassan Reddick basically say, F you, pay me, and then get away with it. And Hassan Reddick doesn't want to be underpaid, but somebody's got to humble up. You can't keep doing this.
I'll get to a couple of comments here. One from John on Facebook. Actually, I'm going to get to two comments from John. Said, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him tomorrow. Too many dots to connect the last 24 hours.
His dots connected a month ago.
I wouldn't be surprised if Reddick shows up in 10 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up week 11 at this point. I don't know. Like,
this I almost don't care. It's like, at this
point. I understand the exhaustion with it. And actually, this gets me to John's second comment here, where he says, top five defense now, top two with Reddick. I agree. I think the Jets can still have a top five defense without Hassan Reddick. But I want to, and this isn't what you're saying, John. This is what I've seen other people have kind of said. I want to get to some criticisms that I've seen or some comments I've seen that are just very nonsensical, Mike. And you know, we love calling out false narratives.
You don't need to. We have depth. Okay.
Right. I have been told this offseason that simultaneously Hassan Reddick is better than Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers combined, but the simultaneously the Jets don't need Hassan Reddick. Someone makes sense of that, because that doesn't compute with my brain, because Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers were two of the Jets' four best defensive linemen last year. Bryce Huff has been the most efficient pass rusher in the NFL last 2 years. John Franklin Myers is a really, really good and really vastly underrated player. So if you're going to tell me that Hassan Reddick is better than both of them combined, but that don't need Hassan Reddick, that doesn't make sense to me. And I've even seen people, and this is coming from, this isn't meant to take shots. Rob Carpenter, former Jet on Twitter, disagreed with a take I had, where I was basically saying, and this wasn't even like a take. I think this is a very, very cold, mild opinion to have. I said, if Reddick doesn't show up, the Jets essentially got rid of Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers and made no meaningful additions to their D-line. I trust Saleh, and I still think the unit's going to be good, but that's not ideal, because I do still trust Robert Saleh. I do still think the Jets can have a top five defense with Hassan Reddick. I don't think the D-line is going to be bad, but if Reddick isn't there week one and Reddick's not there, who knows until when, you essentially got rid of Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers and did not make any notable additions. Save me with the Javon Kinlaw stuff. He's not even better than Quentin Jefferson from at least what we've seen to this point. He might be better this year. He hasn't been in the past. And also, he has injury concerns. So, and then Rob responds back and he goes, they got three UDFA guys that'll be playing Tack McKinley, a former first round pick. Additions were made without Reddick.
Well, we got, I thought you didn't like Will McDonald. Now he's good enough to replace us on Reddick.
He's talking about Tack McKinley, not as a former first
round. No, I'm saying even beyond, because obviously sure. McDonald would probably be the biggest benefactor.
Jets fans aren't going to like it, but Michael Clemens is going to be the biggest benefactor. But Michael Clemens is the guy who's going to receive the biggest uptick in playing time from all this. But look, I love Braden McGregor. I love Leonard Taylor. I love Eric Watts. I love what we saw from them this summer. Tack McKinley as well. They're not Hassan Reddick. And expecting UDFAs, expecting undrafted rookies to produce at the level of an all-pro pass rusher is insane to me. How could anybody logically make that jump in their minds where they go, okay, we don't need Hassan Reddick. We have three undrafted rookies. Does that not sound insane to anybody else but me? Am I the only one that think that sounds crazy?
Because they're leading on the correct assumption that Robert Saleh is both a great identifier of defensive line talent and developer of defensive line talent.
And that's all
they are thinking. The problem, though, is because they saw Jermaine Johnson go from completely bang average rookie year to Pro Bowl year two, and they're thinking, well, everybody can do that. Well, Jermaine Johnson was considered a major draft slide. People thought he was going top 10. He's freakishly talented.
Yep.
So, of course, he can improve that quickly. Not everybody can. And number two, to back it up, Jermaine Johnson has star potential. He is not a star. He has star potential. Hassan Reddick is a star. Yes. I liked Will McDonald as a prospect. That's why I didn't necessarily take the pick, just because I liked him as a player, I think, more than most. But I don't see star potential right now from what I've seen in the pro. Does anybody take any one of that 11 defensive linemen they have? Solomon Thomas, Braden McGregor, Leonard Taylor, guys I like that I think could be good NFL players, but you can stick three of them together. They're not Hassan Reddick. And Hassan Reddick is banking on, I think what he's banking on is they're going to go play the Niners. They're not going to get pressure on Brock Purdy, and they're going to go, wow, we really need him. And then they come back with their hat in their hand, like, I'm sorry, Hassan, and they'll pay. That's what he's banking on, which, by the way, that'd be a really bad look in the locker room if that's his end. Oh, that would really ruin stuff. And that would – this goes again, why it doesn't help anybody. I think that would ruin Hassan's leverage also. So now the Jets are going, what, you sabotaged us? And probably against our most important team of the year, week one, Monday Night Football. You said, let's go let the dummies out there. They'll get killed and then they'll pay me. For guys you haven't even met yet, that would mess up the locker room even more too. So again – nobody wins.
Yeah. I think the logic is coming from a good place. Because like you said, the logic of behind, we can just replace him internally is sound if their logic is, Robert Saleh is a great talent evaluator and developing defensive line talent has always been his thing. That's totally fair. And the logic is fine there. But as John is saying here in chat, we don't need him to be good, which is true, but super Lee with him. The Jets are an all-in team this year. They are trying to win a Super Bowl. They have 1 to 2 years where this window is
open. They trade for Hassan Reddick.
Right. Exactly. They traded for Hassan Reddick, who was in the last year of his deal, because they're trying to win a Super Bowl this year. You do not want to be trying to win a Super Bowl with Michael Clemens as one of your starting edge rushers. That's not good. That's not a good strategy. Sure, and people are like, oh, Braden McGregor is going to take that role. I would love if Braden McGregor was a Pro Bowler this year. But guys, let's be real.
I will drive from here to Ann Arbor if Braden McGregor is a regular starter.
Yeah.
On and this team, it is not to me. Good looking guy. If he's a regular starter on this team, and you're banking on that in a Super Bowl year,
it's wild to me, because I'll say that stuff on Twitter, and then I'll get ratioed by people telling me that the Jets' defensive line depth is better this year than it was last year. That's a real conversation I had on Twitter, and more people were agreeing with the other person, saying that the Jets
are still good, but
of course it's still good. It's the fucking Jets. Of course, the Jets under Robert Saleh will never have bad defensive line depth. That's just never going to happen. They spent 11 or 10 roster spots on defensive linemen right now, plus 11 if you include Hassan Reddick. It's not going to be bad under Robert Saleh. He will never let that happen, but it's not what it could be. And it's worse than it was last year, because they downgraded defensive tackle, because Javon Kinlaw has never had nearly as good of a year as Quentin Jefferson just had last year. They lost John Franco Myers for nothing, for literally nothing. They got a 2026 sixth round pick for a really good starting caliber defensive lineman. You could say capish, whatever. They still lost him. And then they replaced Bryce Huff with Hassan Reddick, and Hassan Reddick's not there. So how in the world is the defensive line depth better this year? It's not because they have three undrafted rookies. They're mysteries. We don't know what they're going to be. Like, I would love it if they were all long-term NFL players. We don't know that. We have no idea. And right now, I'm not ready to say Leonard Taylor or Eric Watts should be playing 30, 40% of snaps. Absolutely not. No way. It's just people are – the narrative is crazy to me. The narrative that the Jets simultaneously don't need Hassan Reddick, but that Hassan Reddick is significantly better than the guys the Jets had last year, does not make sense to me. And I need to call that out. And I people calling Hassan Reddick a luxury, it's dumb. Yes, as John is saying here, the Jets don't need Hassan Reddick to have a good defense. They don't. They could still have a top five defense without Hassan Reddick. I do truly believe that. But man, why? Like, why not just have him there? Like, why not just have him there? And you're so much better with Hassan Reddick.
I think Brian put it very well, where he said they have better depth and worse starters.
Maybe. And that's pending the UDFAs. I'm not ready to crown them as good depth pieces yet, because we don't know. I think Tack McKinley is a good depth piece. I think from what we saw from Tack McKinley this year, and the fact that he has plenty of NFL experience, I mean, we've seen him play at a pretty high level in the NFL. His first couple years in Atlanta were pretty good. Obviously, that's like 6-7 years ago now. But I'm more willing to call him good depth than I am Leonard Taylor yet. I don't know. First of all, Leonard Taylor, for as impressive as he was in the preseason, is still working out the kinks. Like, I don't think he was – he had some issues in run defense in the preseason.
He went undrafted for a reason, these guys. Went undrafted
for a reason. I'm not ready to crown them as great depth. I would love it if they are, and I'm not ruling out that possibility. Maybe. And maybe I'll agree with that. But also, some of those depth pieces are now being elevated to bigger roles without Hassan Reddick there. Michael Clemens was your depth piece last year. Now he's probably playing 50% of snaps week one. Will McDonald was a low down day. He was like your fifth or sixth edge rusher last year. Now he's your third edge rusher going into week one. So I think the depth has been elevated to more increased roles now, to higher roles, to larger roles in the team. So we'll see. But I agree here. The Quentin Jefferson to Javon Kinlaw transition pending week one feels like a downgrade. It is. It is a downgrade. I mean, maybe Javon Kinlaw can unlock some potential with Robert Saleh back as his coach. I don't know. But one, he has to stay healthy, which has been an issue for him throughout his career. And two, he's just never been as good as Quentin Jefferson was last year. Statistically, never had anywhere near as good of a year as Quentin Jefferson did last year. And that's something. And the Jets paid significantly more for Kinlaw. So I don't know. I don't want to harp on it too much, because again, I'm very confident.
Kinlaw's a thing where I'll buy Robert Saleh knowledge. Like, you can sell me on that. Fine. You may, maybe not you, but you could sell me on that. Fine. It's not the worst thing in the world. Like, saying Braden McGregor could replace Hassan Reddick,
I don't think Quentin Jefferson for Javon Kinlaw, that transition is going to be like make or break the season. And it's also very like Javon Kinlaw has a higher ceiling than Quentin Jefferson. I get why the Jets did it. I understand completely why they did this. Robert Saleh was one of the biggest reasons. People might not know, I was covering the San Francisco 49ers when the 49ers drafted Javon Kinlaw. They brought him in to replace DeForest Buckner, and that was a Robert Saleh pick. Robert Saleh banged the table for Javon Kinlaw. He loved that dude. And that's why they brought him in. So I'm not shocked at all that Robert Saleh saw Javon Kinlaw hit free agency this offseason and was like, oh my God, we got to bring this guy in. I get it. I understand it. But I don't want to harp on the D-line too much because it's going to be really good. The Jets defense is
good. How can you not? Because that's the only thing that's been a major negative for the Jets, in my opinion, this offseason. There's been no weird Aaron Rodgers quotes. There's no cataclysmic injury to this point. There's none of that stuff. There's no last year where the team was good roster-wise, but there were just some huge gaping holes that didn't address. Cough, cough, backup quarterback. Cough, cough, offensive line. Like, they addressed all these things. It should be like Shangri-La coming in here. Like, perfect. And then what do you know? What amazes me the most is, let's say that the worst-case scenario happens for both sides. Like, that there's nothing that Reddick doesn't even, like, report. Or he reports enough for the league year to recruit. Like, one of those things.
And then he, like, has a soft tissue injury.
Oh, my hamstring hurts or whatever. That's my shoulder. But, you know,
something that could happen.
Yeah. My pinky finger is really sore. Like, let's say that happens. Then Joe Douglas, again, it's a third-round pick. It's not like he mortgaged the future, but it's still a valuable asset for essentially nothing in a championship year while also being deprived of your number one pass rusher in a defense that the pass rush is as important to them as anybody just because you didn't want to give in to some contract demands that you knew you had when you traded for him. That would be an awful look. And Hassan Reddick, in a contract year, you had the worst year of your career, marred by not showing up and being petulant and not performing when you're there, right before you turn 30 because you wanted to get a contract that no one else was willing to give you. And now after this mess, no one's going to want to give you anything close to that. That could happen. And then nobody wins. And then what? Because you didn't want to admit you were wrong, either one of you? I honestly don't care. I don't care if this is the biggest loss for the GMs and player GM negotiations ever, or if Hassan Reddick, like, I don't care who wins at this point. Like, Woody, like, are you listening? I know you listen, Woody, because there was that article where you say that you tell Robert Saleh to go based on stuff you hear online, if you remember that Athletic article. So Woody, I know you listen, Woody.
Woody is a confirmed listener of the Jet Press podcast. That's true.
Get these guys in a room, in a basement, take the key. Give them like two. Give them like some pizza so they don't go hungry. They're both big guys. Let them figure this out. Don't let them leave the room until they do.
Getting them in the same room would be an accomplishment at this point. Like, they haven't even talked. They haven't talked on the phone.
Hassan's place. Give him that win. At this point, I don't care. And then have armed guards barricade him in and say, until you sign pen to paper here on a deal that is equitable, it's good for you because you get paid more and it does not hamstring us financially, you're not getting that. I'm sorry. We're blocking the doors because I'm losing money on this. Hassan, you're losing money. And Joe Douglas, in a make or break year, your team is worse. So who's winning here? Who benefits from this?
Nobody, Mike. We'll get a couple more comments here. Brian said that Al Woods, the Leonard Taylor transition, should be an upgrade. I think like Lecky Fotu is meant to be like the Al Woods replacement, but yeah, Al Woods offered. I don't know if I've seen a play defensive lineman offer less as a pass rusher than Al Woods did in his few pass rush.
He didn't even try to make moves. He just went forward and pushed.
Like there's a difference between being like, okay, you are a nose tackle run stuffer. That's why we're bringing you in versus a guy who genuinely cannot play on passing downs because he's as effective as I am out there. Like that was Al Woods.
He was an okay run stuff, but like not like he was Haloti Ngata in his prime or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
Fotu is more athletic, so
he's younger,
and obviously Leonard Taylor is going to be a big downgrade in run defense there, but as a pass rusher offers a lot more. And then, of course, Solomon Thomas, weird. Not sure how the Jets found a guy the exact same name, the exact same position. Hope he's good. Maybe it's Solomon Thomas, like, the second. Maybe it's, like, a Michael Carter situation.
How was he a number three pick?
Upside.
Ahead of Mahomes.
Athleticism and upside. That's what got him drafted that high. That's what got him drafted that high. But now Robert Saleh saved his career. He's a solid player. Solomon Thomas is fine.
I mean, he's not bad. But all right, now we actually got games to talk about.
Dude, football is back. We have actual football. 24 hours from now, Mike, or a little over 24 hours, we have an actual regular season football game. That's great.
It's a good one, Chiefs Ravens.
I know.
Jets, because, you know, why give them a winnable game, but why not give them a game where they're favored, you know, to get them off 1-0 feeling good. Monday Night Football, already bad vibes considering last year, against Leonard Floyd, already even more bad vibes because he's on the Niners now. We left Buffalo to go to the Niners. On the road, not great either. San Francisco, Aaron Rodgers' nemesis, no matter how good they were, how good the Packers were, it's always been his nemesis, his hometown 49ers, and they're probably the best team in the league. A lot working against the Jets. I still think, I'm not the biggest fan of Brock Purdy as a quarterback, but I still think the Niners are my pick to come out of the NFC this year, Super Bowl-wise, because if you just look 1-53, and I know their secondary's not particularly great. I know their corners are kind of iffy. Talanoa Hufanga's hurt, but if Hufanga's healthy, where's the weakness on this team? And not only do they not really have weaknesses, but you can make a case, and I think a pretty strong case, that running back, best in the league, Christian McCaffrey, left tackle, best in the league, Trent Williams, even still at 36. Receivers in terms of a 1-2 punch, probably top five with Ayuk and Debo Samuel.
Definitely.
Definitely. Top three tight end in George Kittle.
Yeah.
You could argue, I don't know if he is my number one, but I will hear arguments on Nick Bosa as the best 4-3 defensive end. Probably Myles Garrett's better, but if you convince me enough, I could see Bosa being one.
He's one of the best.
The best linebacker in the league.
Yes.
Fred Warner. Him and Roquan Smith, but I still think it's Warner. Like, this team is loaded. And I know that Purdy is not a quarterback who's going to win you games by himself, and I still don't think he's that good. I think he's probably smack dab in the middle. If you had to rank all the starting quarterbacks, I think he's in that 16, 17, 18 kind of range. But man, when they needed him to playoff time, he showed up. That Super Bowl, they did not lose because of him. He played okay in that Super Bowl. That was not his fault. So this is as tough an environment for Aaron Rodgers' return and all these new pieces. This is as tough an environment to start out in as you can possibly get.
Not that this should be a surprise, because the Jets have kind of modeled a lot of their roster after the 49ers, but these two rosters are very similar. They are remarkably similar in so many ways. Obviously, there's differences here and there. The Jets don't have a number two receiver that's quite as good as, if you want to say, Debo Samuel's probably their wide receiver too at this point. They don't have Mike Williams isn't as good as Debo Samuel. There's some differences there, but Breece Hall, Christian McCaffrey as the focal points of their offenses, that's relatively the same there. You have two left tackles where, the Jets have Tyron Smith, who, if he's healthy, is a top two or three left tackle in the NFL, and you have Trent Williams, who is probably the best left tackle in the NFL, and both of them have been around for decades, for a long time.
Both Hall of Famers.
Both first ballot Hall of Famers, easily. Then, of course, their defenses are pretty similar as well. I think the secondary is kind of where things change a little bit, but if you're looking at that front seven, very, very, very similar. The Jets don't have a pass rusher at the caliber of Nick Bosa, especially if Hassan Reddick is not there, but the Niners also don't have an interior rusher at the caliber of Quinnen Williams. Javon Hargrave is great. Nick Bosa is great. They have Leonard Floyd. They brought him in. They have the best linebacker in the NFL in Fred Warner. Look, Roquan Smith is great. Warner is one of those two or three players where I think it is unanimous that he is the best player in his position. Fred Warner is an unbelievable linebacker. And honestly, it's crazy to me he's not more of a household name. I know among people who follow the NFL, he is, but casual fans don't really know who Fred Warner is, and that's insane to me because the dude is ridiculously good.
Not really a flashy style of game, doesn't really have a cool name. He just goes out and is awesome.
Honestly, it's kind of what Aaron Donald was for most of his career, until kind of when the Rams finally were having playoff success, got to the Super Bowl. I feel like that's when casual fans started to give him his flowers. Maybe if the Niners win a Super Bowl with Fred Warner, that would happen. But he is an unbelievable player. I would say one of the top 12 players in the NFL, I think, is Fred Warner. So I think that there's very similarities both in their strengths and their weaknesses. And if we're going to talk about how the Jets should attack this Niners team, we were talking about this briefly before the show. I think you run it down their throats. I think if you're looking at any weakness in this Niners defense, and a lot of it is because of some absences. Dre Greenlaw's hurt. He might not play this year. They lost Eric Armstead in the offseason. Talanoa Hufanga, who is a great, great downhill safety, is probably not going to play week one. He's coming off a torn ACL. There is an opportunity to attack the middle of this 49ers defense that the Jets need to take. Javon Hargrave is a great pass rusher. He's not a particularly great run defender. Malik Collins, another guy who is much better as a pass rusher than a run defender. Their middle of their defense does not scare me outside of Fred Warner, who is obviously an unbelievable player. But if you can somehow neutralize Fred Warner, you have an
opportunity. Again, easier said than done.
Easier said than done. But you have an opportunity to run this ball down the Niners' throat, and I think that's exactly what you need to be doing in this game. Obviously, I think you could probably throw on them the Charvarius Ward, Garrett Wilson matchup is going to be really fun, especially given the shade that Ward has thrown at Garrett Wilson in the past, literally saying, like, I don't know who that guy is. I think he's about to find out on Monday. But I think if you are looking for a strategy that this Jets team should take on offense, it's not going to be having Aaron Rodgers throw the ball 40 times in the game. It's going to be running the ball down their throats with Breece Hall, sprinkling in some Braylon Allen. That would be my approach for how to attack them come week one.
I just hope, because this is going to be Rodgers, because as we all know, he's the offensive coordinator now that he's back, because he just openly will not listen to Hackett, probably for the better, considering what we saw last year. But I hope he just doesn't have that temptation of, like, I got to show everybody I'm back, and he just starts chucking it. That would be a fear of mine.
Yeah. If there's one thing
about Hackett, stuff though, like that, I mean.
If there's one thing about Hackett, though, he will lean on the ground game. He's done that a lot throughout his career.
Yeah, but Rodgers doesn't. And
yes. James asking a good question here. Bosa will be mostly lined up against Moses. Yeah, Bosa plays the left end in their defense, so he should be matched up with Moses. I think that's good and bad for the Jets. It's good because I trust Tyron Smith to neutralize Leonard Floyd. I don't think that will be a big issue. I do think the Jets are going to need to give Morgan Moses some help there at right tackle. Morgan Moses had a really good season with the Ravens. I think he's still a better run defender than a pass blocker, which he kind of has been for most of his career. And also, he is coming off that shoulder injury. So give him some help. You know, get Jeremy Ruckett in there to chip. Get Brendan Bates, the guy they just signed off or claimed off waivers. Get him in there to chip. Do what you got to do to give Morgan Moses some help, because Nick Bosa is an incredible player. He is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL.
See, I was wondering where I leaned to looking at this coaching thing, because part of me says I'm nervous about how this defense is going to hold up, because Kyle Shanahan practiced against Robert Saleh's defense forever. Who knows better how to better attack this defense than him?
Yeah.
But also, who knows better how to stop Kyle Shanahan's offense? Because remember last year when they played the Texans? And he's crushed the Texans, and CJ Stroud didn't do anything and he got hurt. Yep. Like, and that's basically that Bobby Slowick was the Niners OC the year before. That's basically Shanahan's offense.
Yeah.
Shut him down. The concern I have, here are a couple of just minor concerns that I have. Number one, I don't know where Sauce is going to be. I would be a little more concerned if he's on Deebo Samuel than Ayuk, because we love Sauce. I don't think he's an amazing open field tackler. Deion wasn't either. A lot of great cornerbacks are. Rod Woodson wasn't either, but he's not. And if Deebo gets going against Sauce, because it's a lot of quick stuff getting the ball, that could be, I think, problematic if they get him involved. Ayuk is really good. I think Ayuk might be better, but we've seen Sauce handle the best of the best. So even if Ayuk gets a couple catches, which should be – that shouldn't alarm anybody. But Deebo just running through guys, a little bit worried about that. And then the other thing too, though, is Hassan Reddick's 90% not going to play. Yeah. Even if he shows up, he's not going to, you know, learn the playbook in time, get enough reps under him to where I think he's going to play. So because of that, Jermaine Johnson I don't think is going to have a great – because he's going up against Trent Williams.
Yeah.
Probably. That's going to be tough. The good news is you look at the rest of that Niners offensive line, Aaron Banks, Colton McKivitt, like, it's not particularly good. I was talking about weaknesses that if you had to pick a worst area on the team, it might be that.
Yeah.
No, like Williams just makes up for it a lot. So while I'm encouraged there, if Jermaine has no sacks in this game, I will not fault him, because this is Trent Williams against a year three guy. Fine.
Yep.
Will McDonald and Michael Clemens, this is your chance, man. This is your chance, because you're going to get one of the easiest tackle matchups you're going to get all year. You're going to get winnable one-on-ones. If they don't get home and Purdy's got all day to throw, that's tough.
Yeah, I think a Will McDonald prop bet for a sack. Not that I'm going to tell anybody what to do with their money, but I think that's a pretty safe bet for this week. Will McDonald will be going up against Colton McKivitz, likely when he's out there, and McKivitz is fine. He's a fine right tackle. I think he's a better run blocker than a pass blocker as well. His PFF pass block grade was pretty bad last year. And the interior of that line is not great, man. Like, Aaron Banks is not particularly good. And that's another guy who's much better run defender, run blocker than he is a pass blocker. Jake Brendel's fine at center. And then they have a rookie guard in Dominic Pooney, who we talked about as a potential option for the Jets, going back to our pre-draft shows, starting at right guard. So if you're going to look at any way that the Jets could win on defense, it's going to be getting, I would say even more so, getting interior pressure. This could be a big Quinnen Williams game, a big Quinnen. He's going to be lined up, probably shading Aaron Banks at left guard. This could be a monster game for Quinnen Williams. And I think that's what the Jets really need to have success. I would also worry, though, about the same way I talked about the Jets attacking the Niners defense. I could see teams attacking the Jets defense that way, too, because the interior run defense outside of Quinnen Williams, it's not great. Like, Quinnen Williams is great. He's a fantastic pass rusher, really good run defender. But Javon Kinlaw is not a good run defender. He has never been in his career. They don't have Leckie Fotu this week, so it's really – for the next few weeks. So if Solomon Thomas is your next best interior run defender, that's not great. Like, that's – I don't want to see –
Christian McCaffrey.
Right, against Christian McCaffrey. And a Niners interior off the line that does run block better than they pass block. So I would say that would be a concern to me. One guy that I'm going to look at is kind of – an X factor, not that we were going to do like X factors, but this just popped in my head, partially for this, but also what you were talking about before, where it comes to the open field tackling. I'm looking at Chuck Clark. That is a guy who I think really needs to have a strong week one, because the Niners are an offense that, and this is every Kyle Shanahan inspired offense, is built on getting guys in open space and making guys miss. Deebo Samuel does that better than almost any wide receiver in the NFL, but it's not just him. Brandon Ayuk can do it. George Kittle is an amazing yak receiver for a tight end, especially at his size. We know Christian McCaffrey in the open field is dangerous. They have so many weapons in an offense that can make plays after the catch and in open space. And the Jets have in the past, and even last year, they can be a little undisciplined on defense sometimes. I know Jordan Whitehead is gone, and that was a lot of the root of the issues with Jordan Whitehead, but Quincy Williams, for as incredible as he is, can still be a little undisciplined. And it's week one. You're still going to be having to shake off some of that rust. I think that favors ball carriers more than it does defenders who are still trying to get accustomed to tackling again, because they have not been tackling at full speed all summer. So that's why Chuck Clark, who has throughout his career been one of the best tackling safeties in the entire NFL, I think he's going to be such an important player for this Jets defense in week one. They're going to need him to be making tackles in open space, because I don't trust Sauce Gardner to do it. I don't trust Quincy Williams to be doing that regularly right now and come week one. I think that could be a major, major concern for the Jets. And Chuck Clark is somebody that I'm keeping my eye on, saying, all right, he's someone who needs to do this. He's someone who needs to step up and make these tackles in the open field and show why he's an improvement and an upgrade over Jordan Whitehead.
I will say, though, here's something that's encouraging, because the guy in charge of their defense now, Nick Sorensen's their defensive coordinator, but their assistant head coach for defense, Brandon Staley. Now, Brandon Staley.
Not about that. That's right. Wow.
Brandon Staley, actually, historically, up until the last year where everything fell apart, pass defense, a lot of cover seven, a lot of cover, like, you know, not terrible.
Yeah.
Run defense continuously gash. I mean, I think I did mock drafts for the Chargers like 3 years in a row. I had them take an interior defensive tackle and they never did.
Yeah.
Because it was that egregious. So. Maybe that's one of the trade-offs of just going to that scheme. Like, when the Jets signed up for Robert Saleh and they committed to his scheme, like, they know we're going to have to keep this many defensive linemen. We're not going to blitz a lot. Like, some schemes just have flexible rules that don't really break. Now, Saleh appears to have a lot of very good ones, and he has good players to execute them, but he's just never going to blitz. He's never going to be Brian Flores blitzing seven guys on second and four. They're just not going to do that. Staley, because of the way his scheme worked, he's just not, I don't think, ever really going to be an amazing run stuffing coordinator, unless, like he was with the Rams, you have like Aaron Donald and just you luck into this amazing run stuffing line, which he didn't have in LA and he doesn't have now in San Francisco. So that's all more reason to ride Breece Hall. Like, if I'm in charge of coordinating, if I'm offensive coordinator Aaron Rodgers, minimum 25 touches for Breece Hall.
Yep.
You are throwing up after this game. If you're not throwing up, we didn't do a good job getting you the ball enough. Now, not every game's going to be like that. Some games, I'll be funny. You were throwing 50 times, air it out. This is not the game for that. This is not the team for that. Because also, you need to control the clock. And not to get too old-timey, like, you know, conservative stuff, but whoever wins the possession battle, time possession battle, is winning this game. Because they're going to be controlling the ball on the ground. And if Brees Hall is getting stopped and Christian McCaffrey is not getting stopped, good night, Vienna. That's all she wrote.
I think I had to look this up just to make sure. Charvarius Ward doesn't follow receivers, it looks like. It looks like he is basically strictly a left.
I was told that that doesn't make you a good cornerback. If we're listening to Asante Samuel.
A lot. And again, that's a very – they run a similar defensive scheme to the Jets. I'm not surprised at all that he doesn't follow opposing cornerbacks. He played all but 32 snaps last year at left cornerback. He played 820 at left cornerback and 32 at right cornerback. So he's almost exclusively on the left side. That means if the Jets are moving their receivers around, which they will be, there's going to be opportunities for Garrett Wilson lining up against Diamador Lenore, maybe if he's in the slot, or –
that's such a cool name, though.
I interviewed Diamador Lenore when he was coming to the NFL. Really good dude.
Really? Yeah, well, that's nice.
Good guy. I don't even know. Who is their second corner? Isaac Yiadom is starting for them, the former Colt.
Oh, yeah.
Was he a Colt, right?
No, he was a Bronco, I think, for a while in the Saints.
I was thinking Broncos, yes.
One of the horse teams.
That's crazy that he's starting for them. He's their second corner. Yeah, all right. There's going to be opportunities for Garrett Wilson in this game to be making some plays. They also have Rock Ya-Sin. That's a former Colt. Yeah, there's going to be opportunities for Garrett Wilson when he's not lined up against Charvarius Ward, even when he is against Charvarius Ward, because Charvarius Ward is not necessarily the best cornerback in the NFL. I'm pretty sure when we were talking about guys who hold a lot, how many penalties did Charvarius Ward have last year? Wasn't it a ridiculous amount? Wasn't it so many?
It was high. I want to get to a comment really quick, though. James sure. Gilby in chat, Ravens shut them down completely last year. We can too. You know the difference between that game and this one? Trent Williams didn't play. And yeah, the Ravens just teed off on Brock Purdy, and he was running for his life every single play. And Lamar Jackson. I know defensively and all that, but that's a force multiplier. We think Aaron Rodgers can be good, even if Aaron Rodgers, I think, even hits the high end of what I'm expecting this year. I am not expecting that level of Lamar Jackson play from him.
Honestly, I think both of these offenses are very well suited to face the defenses that they're facing. I think I would give both offenses the tactical schematic advantage going into this game, which again is not surprising because both teams are built very similarly. Their rosters are very similar. Their strengths and weaknesses are pretty similar. So I would say it's been a long time since we've seen the Jets get into a shootout. The Chiefs game wasn't a shootout, but it kind of felt like one a little bit. I don't know the last time when's the last time the Jets were in a game where both teams scored 30 points?
1998. I don't know.
I'm giving a recent example, but I think this has the potential to be one of those games because I think the Niners are so good at exploiting weaknesses on defense that even though the Jets have so much talent in their defense, they're going to find ways to exploit it. And I think it's going to be those plays after the catch. They're not going to be going one-on-one shots against Sauce Gardner. That is not how they're going to attack this defense. They're going to go short, intermediate stuff where they're going to try and make plays in open space and after the catch. And I think they're going to succeed doing it. I really think
the tough part for Saleh too, as you mentioned before, the offense having the advantage is their whole, it's not Tampa 2 necessarily, but it's everybody hang back, no big plays, make them do 10 play drives. Eventually they'll mess something up. Well, when you have McCaffrey and Tebow and Ayuk and Kittle, you don't mess up as much.
And that's why it really hurts not having Hassan Reddick for this game, most likely. Cause it's like, man, that's how you force pressure. That's how you force mistakes if you get pressure on the quarterback.
Don't worry, though. Brandon McGregor will do it just fine. So
I truly think we're getting a Will McDonald sack this game. Quinnen Williams has to have a monster game. Mike, I think it's time for our first predictions segment of the year.
And I have them going 0-1 to start the year. Honestly, if they were at home, I still might have, but you could talk me into it. On the road, week one, Monday Night Football is tough. Now, honestly, I'd rather get them now than at the beginning of the year. And I do like the fact their schedule, honestly, I may set myself up for mockery here. After this game, their schedule is really easy. The next 5-6 weeks. There's a chance they could lose this game and then win like 5 in a row. Because it's like Tennessee, New England, Denver, Minnesota, and then I think Buffalo at home, which is not too egregious, but this is a tough ask. So I'm going to say 49ers 24, Jets 17.
Okay.
I think Rodgers is going to throw a touchdown pass. I think Brees Hall is going to run for a touchdown pass. I just think it's tough
He's going to run for a touchdown pass?
Did I?
Yeah.
That's because I'm stupid. He will run for a touchdown. or he'll do some weird single wing triple option thing where they don't really know. He'll do – I hate this when guys do that little like pop pass forward and it counts as a completed pass.
Oh, that's the Mahomes special. That's the
pass. I hate that because it counts as a completion.
Yeah, that's the Andy Reid special right there.
It'll be one of those. I just find it tough for them to, with Rodgers working his way back. We still, again, we give you all this analysis at the end of the year. If Aaron Rodgers is good, they'll win. If Aaron Rodgers is bad, they're going to lose. Yep. That's going to be the tale of most of these games. I just can't really make a prediction right now because I don't really know what he has.
Yeah.
If they were playing him week 8 and I just saw a couple weeks of Rodgers and I get my mind right, I'm like, okay, it's a complete wild card. We don't know. Aaron Rodgers could be washed right now for all we know. So I can't really base it off that. Because of that, I'm going to guard myself against that. I'm going to say they lose, but I think they have an easy chance to just rebound with a couple of very winnable games after this.
This is the most pumped I've been for one of these predictions, maybe since week 1 last year, Mike. Like, I just
– what happened then?
We did these
– I got it right. I said they would win, but
– You did. That's true.
Not in the manner that they did.
I think you were more accurate with your predictions last year than I was. We didn't tally it up, but I think you got more right.
Well, when Zach got in, you just picked against them all the time. And that
helped. It's just so miserable. I was miserable watching this team. That's why I'm pumped right now.
You watched 2 Tim Boyle starts.
And that's, Mike, that's why I'm excited right now. And that's why I'm also going to predict the Jets lose.
We got to keep our head in our shoulders here.
So. I can't pick them to win. I just can't do it. Some of the reasons that you said, one, we don't know what Aaron Rodgers is going to look like. I don't know. We talked about this briefly before the show, before we went live. Aaron Rodgers could be the 5th or 6th best quarterback in the NFL this year. That's totally a feasible outcome. He also could be the 25th. That's a possible outcome as well. If his mobility is shot and he's completely washed and he's afraid to pull the trigger, then he might be bad. I have no idea. We don't know. Or he could be really good and the mobility.
Well, no one really knows, to be honest.
Nobody knows. Absolutely nobody knows. We're going to know a little bit more after week 1, what he's got left in the tank, how comfortable he looked in the pocket, how comfortable he looked taking hits, because he's going to take hits in this game. That's what it comes down to. But I also think this is going to be pretty high scoring. And I think that the Niners are going to find ways to exploit this Jets defense. I think the Jets defense is going to have a disappointing week 1 is my, I don't know if that's a bold prediction, but my prediction for this week. I think the Niners score 30 plus against the Jets. I think maybe 31-24 to go similar to what you did, just a little bit more high scoring. Seems realistic to me. I think that the Niners will find ways to score. I think Christian McCaffrey might have a big game. I think there's gonna be a lot of missed tackles. You know, again, it's just, you didn't play the starters all summer. They have not tackled. Like, they don't do live tackling drills in practice. Like, they are not tackling real human beings. And now they're gonna go up against a team that is maybe the best after the catch in the league, maybe outside of Miami. They're both right in that same tier. That's a really tough ask. It's a really tough ask to ask Quincy Williams after not tackling anybody for 9 months to tackle Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey in open space. That's hard, man. And George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk. So I'm going to give the edge to the Niners there. I think it's going to be high scoring, but I'll say 31-24 Niners. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see if we're both right or we'll see if we're both wrong. I don't know. That's my prediction. Let us know your predictions. We got John said, I'll pick them for you. 24-17 Jets, baby. I wish I could do that. I wish I could just sit up here and be like, yeah, like part of me is like, just do it for the meme, but I can't. Also, Brian, our resident statistician, saying Jets and Browns both scored 30 plus in 2022.
The Flacco comeback.
That was the Flacco kiss. That wasn't even a Zach Wilson. That was. Was that week 2?
That was when they were down with like 31-17 with a minute left and they won.
That's right. Yeah. That's almost like, I don't even know if I call that game a shootout because like 2 of the scores happened in the last minute or last 2 minutes. So, but that would count.
I'm trying to just remember I feel bad because honestly, considering all the hype I have around this team and how excited I am to watch this team if they're healthy, because I think they are really deep. Mm. Like, San Francisco's one of like maybe 3 teams I would have picked to beat them week 1. Maybe the Chiefs, maybe Baltimore. Like,
yeah,
man, did they get a rotten draw. But again, I'd rather them do it, like kind of get it out of the way now. That way if you have a stinker now, you can recover from it instead of week 14 or whatever.
Yeah, man, it's going to be fun. It's going to be wild. Jets football's back, dude. We are going to watch an actual live New York Jets game. And of course, if you want to listen to us talk about the game, even though it's a Monday night, we will be live here on the Jet Press YouTube channel, live immediately following the game. There's a chance one of us might not be here to start, but we will both be here eventually. Keep an eye out for that if you want to hear our thoughts on the game. Last year when we did it after that first Monday night game, it was one of the most ridiculous nights of watching a sport that I've ever had.
It was fun because we won in a crazy way, but then we were talking about training for Kyler Murray. Like, it was a weird...
Oh, my God, you're right. We were talking about options. Little did
we were like, well, obviously there's no way they're going to stick with Zach Wilson the whole year. Like, we just thought that, and then...
Little did we know our savior was Trevor Siemian.
Talking about Jameis, I remember, too.
Yep.
Tim Boyle and Trevor Siemian. Thanks, Joe Douglas.
And Brett Rippon. Brett Rippon was on the roster.
Brett Rippon was on the roster. Yeah. Brett Rippon
in the end.
We never let it rip, though.
Hopefully this Monday is a different sort of emotion after the show, because it was wild last year. But I'm excited, Mike. I'm very, very excited.
So thank you guys for tuning into the Jet Press Podcast. Let's hope for a 1-0. And no matter what happens, win or lose, you'll find us on all the podcast platforms and YouTube at the Jet Press. You can subscribe and like the stream. Liking the stream really helps. Justin, any other thoughts before week one?
Brian in chat said 49ers lost 24-20 at home week one, coming off their last Super Bowl loss in 2020. Let's see if
history... worst roster.
Look, man, we're going for parallels here. Let's see if history can repeat itself this year, and then maybe... I mean, if that happens, if the Jets win 24-20, I'm going to remember this comment for Brian.
That was also a COVID year, so wasn't really...
As Brian said, they blew out the Jets the next week. That is the last time these two teams have played. I was just looking this up. Do you know who the Jets' leading receiver and rusher in that game was? In that week two game against Niners in 2020?
In the week two against 2020, leading receiver and rusher, same guy?
No. Well, who were each of them? Let's do a little trivia at the end here.
Frank Gore.
Yes, Frank Gore is the leading rusher.
And leading receiver, Ryan Griffin?
No, it's so sad. That's a fair guess. It is.
That's a less sad guess than Ryan Griffin.
No, it is everyone's favorite lacrosse player, Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan.
Wow. He was on the Jets.
He was on the Jets in 2020 for, I don't even think the full year, but he was on the Jets. So Chris Hogan was really...
Man, I must have memory hold that.
It is not a fond memory in our Jets fandoms. But anyway, that little trivia to end the show. Thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter @JustinTFreed. Follow Jet Press @TheJetPress. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And now that the season is here, we stream live immediately following every single Jets game. We will be live Monday on the Jet Press YouTube channel. Make sure you check us out. Thank you all for listening to the Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We will see you guys on Monday.
And let's hope for a happy post game. We didn't get many of them last year, so let's hope for one this year.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.